Good evening and welcome to Your Call. Joining me this evening is someone who's truly a woman of substance, Sharmila Tagore. Sharmila ji, thank you very much for joining me this evening. We're in a new year, a time to celebrate and look forward with hope. But we saw the events which we ended last year with, a lot of anger, public protests on the street. But how much do you think we've actually achieved with protests and anger and actually changing the attitude we have towards women in India?
I think protest from civil society is very important in a democracy. It keeps the pressure on. I mean, obviously, we have a right to express our concerns, our dissatisfaction, and in some cases, it really brings, it pressurizes the government to do something. But of course, it has to be peaceful, it has to be expressed properly, and no way we must allow anything to happen so that the issue is hijacked. Having said that, we have to go beyond the protest and we have to address the issue, because the issue has been there for so long, and even when the entire capital is talking about it, everybody is agitated and so much is happening in the media and, you know, private homes, everything. Despite that, every day, a report of rape, and every day something is happening.
And gang five rapes.
Gang rapes, 11-year-old, 7-year-old in Kerala, acid being thrown on, even that day, the couple in a car, a man and a woman. The man was stripped and beaten, and then the woman was raped, and she called for help and somebody heard her and let her out the neck. So nothing has deterred. When you're talking about chemical castration, you're talking about all kinds of things, death penalty. Despite that, this is happening. So we have to really reflect and understand what is this in our culture. I think somehow the value of the rapist, I mean, the rapist, what they are saying, and somehow in our culture, it kind of endorses that, if I may use such a very strong word. But I really don't know what to say, because the son preference that we have and the way we bring up our men, our boys, with this sense of entitlement, a sense of privilege that they are superior to their sisters. And I cannot do that and expect my daughter to be treated equally on the street.
In fact, it's interesting what you're saying, because then you're looking at policing and penalties are just one part of the issue, because really the larger problem then is also about the society we're living in. What do you think? And you've been a young film actress on your own in Mumbai. You've got two young daughters. What has changed over the years? Is it because now Indian women are more assertive? We're seeing rapes reported, which may not have been earlier. Is it that there has been a degeneration of values? What do you see it as?
It's like, it seems as if hurting women is entertainment, you know? It's a kind of feeling, making them feel good about it. We have to get our men to think, the equality has to come in, the change in perception has to come in, the way they look at themselves has to. It is, they can't look at a woman and say she's vulnerable and cowering and we need her subjugation to make us feel masculine. You know, then more and more women are going out to work these days, and they are not cowering and they are not submissive. They have enough confidence to spell out what they want, you know. And I think men sometimes perhaps feel threatened. Again, I'm generalizing, perhaps not. But they have to look at it carefully, because in families, in workplace, in marriages, this inequality and this power structure. I think that is what we need to address.
You talked about the culture, and the fact is that given the fact that we've seen that the traditional power structures, whether it's politics, whether it's corporate boardrooms, is traditionally towards men, and you hear statements like just recently the president's son has made a statement about, you know, these protesters are all dented, painted, implying made up, they're not real students. In that sense, there's a patriarchal mindset. Crimes against women, except for this instance, haven't been taken seriously by the power structures either, whether it's the government or the police.
Yes, yes, because these people haven't really dropped in from the moon, you know. They're also part of society. The perpetrators, the neighbors were shocked. The family members were shocked. They didn't know. They lead a normal life. The police also, I mean, the background is more or less the same, isn't mm-hmm. it? It's, as you say, patriarchal construct. And there always, a woman has to do, you know, when we started working, we were the first generation of working people, working mm-hmm. Women. Mm-hmm. And that also from films. And films were very frowned, you know, it wasn't a very good profession. Girls from good families didn't go to films. So it was a double thing. And so, yeah, we've seen it from then to now. And yes, the clothes have changed, the language has changed. But the underlying, you know, that has not really changed. The gaze, mm-hmm. the way men look at themselves, the way they feel superior, the way they feel they have to protect women, you know, mm-hmm. that I think in 60 years we have failed to bring in that equality.
That's really sad. And in fact, I've got some questions of some young protesters.
Hello, ma'am. My name is Deblin Roy. I'm a student from Calcutta University. My question to you is, you are one of the four runners in propagating Western clothes in Bollywood film industry, if not the first. What do you have to say about the fact that people still continue victim blaming and the victim is always blamed for wearing short clothes and going out late at night? What do you have to say about that?
As far as clothes are concerned, yes, I mean, you know, young girls celebrate their youth. They celebrate their body and they want to look good and they want to wear smart clothes. And it's the gaze. I mean, it's the person who is actually committing the rape is all right, but the person, the victim, is told that she's now lost her honor. Mm-hmm. You know, outraging modesty and Eve teasing and these sort of cuddly words just have to be dispensed with. We have to walk, to get out of that discourse. We have to say, hey, there's nothing wrong with us, you know. It's you who are looking at us like that. Mm-hmm. You know, you're the one. So this sense of honor, etc., has to go.
Do you think sometimes rape is dismissed by politicians as a women's issue, and that's really where
part
of the issue is?
Men get raped also. Men get raped. Transgenders get raped. It's not just a women's issue.
But it's seen as a women's problem.
Women are vulnerable, and transgenders are more vulnerable than men. But young boys can continuously being abused in mm-hmm. some places. And as you know, 90% happens, according to the experts, within the family. Mm-hmm. And boys are not exempted. So I don't think this is a woman's issue.
When we've looked at how, as a society, how we deal with crimes against women, and you made the point of Eve teasing being this cuddly kind of word.
Yeah.
Now, what we've seen in Hindi cinema often, and especially recently, is this kind of, you know, somehow aggressively harassing a girl, and then she falls in love with you, and you know you see it in the kind of songs, mm. you see it mm. in the kind of aggression which the heroes will have. That's also a message that comes across in a country where cinema is such a powerful influence.
Yes, I am hearing what you're saying, because it is the films reflect life, and it's a commercial medium. They are reaching out to many people, and they want to keep everybody pleased, everybody mm-hmm. happy, for the movie to be a big hit. And a woman is not threatened by this man's strength. You know, she kind of accepts. Even a lot of women also buy into that image.
The role matches.
Yeah. But if you reverse it, if you make the woman far, you know, aggressive, mm-hmm. etc., or equal even, then there is a resentment. So the powerful role, the decision-making roles will always go to a man. Mm-hmm. Even the villain's role will go to a man. And even an elderly man will continue to get roles
roles
written for him, especially.
Mm-hmm. But as a former censor board chief, when you were there, what were the kind of roles or the scenes you found most disturbing? Because you did, in a sense, take a very sensitive look at this movies which were demeaning to women or showed excessive violence. What was the kind of the mindset or the attitude you found disturbing when you came across cases like that?
Let me tell you about a story that I was offered when I was working in films. Huh? And it was a movie where this woman has two children, two boys. And one of the boys is very naughty and very behaves badly. At one point, she's feeding the child. She's standing, and this grown-up, about 12-year-old or 13-year-old boy, is eating. And she's standing there, beta yellow, beta bolo. And at one point, he throws the entire plate and everything off the table. instead of giving him one tight slap, she starts picking up things and said, beta, you know. And little later, he takes out a gun in the school and shoots in the air. The father is very annoyed with him, justifiably so. And he takes out his belt and he's hitting him. And the mother is outside, you know, wringing her hands and looking so helpless and crying, mera beta, mera beta. So, you know, that is the kind of film I feel. I refuse that film. Mm-hmm. And I was laughing throughout the film, and the producer got very annoyed with me. And at one point, the guy commits murder. And the woman, the mother, is still shielding. So I said, but why is she shielding him? Nay, you know, the mother. So how can the mother give up? So that's the sort of thing I would be very against, you know. I'm not that kind of a mother, and I most certainly will not work in this film. And somebody else did. Mm-hmm. And it was from the South, and I was getting a lot of money, so that was a huge sacrifice.
Because I remember, like, ironically, when they talk about women's empowerment in cinema, and many have said that, you know, we've come a long way because we can show a woman as a sexual being even in Hindi cinema. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're showing so many women, even heroines will now take on item numbers in a sense. We had many item numbers like Munni Badnaam Hui, Sheela Ki Jawani, which conversely are also used as songs to harass women when on the actual streets. Yeah. And is this empowerment of Bollywood heroines just because they do now, they're not considered vamps if they take part in item numbers? Yet, when we see how it's played out in popular culture, there is a very different aspect of how it's used against to harass women.
It is. There is a, you know, it's a bit like a laborer, you know, who uses his body to earn, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and with that money, you are emancipated, your options are increasing. But the effect of that elsewhere is not so positive. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yes, it is a debate and we really have to look at it. But you must remember this is just entertainment and a commercial enterprise. And what is in society, Hindi films reflect it. And they just want to sell as many tickets as they can. Mm-hmm. So, item numbers, sex and violence sells. And that's a fact.
Well, you're here and I can't miss the chance of actually just playing some excerpts of some of the amazing movies you've actually given us or contributed to Indian cinema with. Let's just have a look at a quick montage we made. Ye chand sa roshan chehra, zulfon ka rang sunehra, ye jheel si neeli aankhein, koi raaz hai inme gehra, taareef karu kya uski jisne tumhe banaya. Roop tera mastana, pyar mera deewana, bhool koi humse na ho jaye. Halkaaye jaan, aaiye aapki aankhon ke naam, hoton ke naam. If we go back to where it all began, you were a Satyajit Ray heroine, a poor Sansara just 13. Tell us about that, because starting as a Satyajit Ray heroine at 13 must have been an experience. Let's just play that clip.
You mind if I take it?
I'll take tuition in a while.
তাহলে আমি বাপের বাড়ি পাঠিয়ে দিও
কেন
এমনিতেই তো অফিস করে ছেলে পড়িয়ে সেই তো রাত্রি করে বাড়ি ফেরে তার উপর আবার
আর উপায় কি বলো
দ্য ট্রিলজি ইজ এ ভেরি ভেরি পপুলার বুক ইন সো এভরিবডি হ্যাড রেড ইট অ্যান্ড হি ওয়াজ অ্যাডভার্টাইজিং ফর আ ইয়াং পার্সন ইন দ্য পেপার্স অ্যান্ড আই থিঙ্ক উই গ্রু আপ ইন আ জয়েন্ট ফ্যামিলি আই গ্রু আপ ইন আ জয়েন্ট ফ্যামিলি. And in fact, we discussed amongst us children because we had about 10, 12 children in the same house. So we had a lovely time and we were discussing and somebody said, why don't you apply and, you know. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, one day the phone rang and there was Ray on the phone asking my father's permission to cast me. And so that's how it happened. He must have seen me in front of my school or God knows where. And so he rang up and then there was a screen test and I passed the screen test and I was cast. and it was wonderful.
And I read that you were actually, you then had to leave school because at that time being a film actress and then it was really looked down upon. So you actually left school.
It was not father being my father. Said no way. I mean, of course she's going to work in the film. Hmm. And if it means that she has to leave your school, she will. And so nobody, of course, asked me what I wanted, but that's how it happened.
And then you went on, of course, to Hindi films and then Evening in Paris, which then created a sensation of a completely different kind.
Yeah.
Were you in two minds at all about taking on that role, especially because you came with, you came from a very illustrious family, Satyajit Ray film heroine, and then a very different kind of role completely.
I did Kashmir Ki Kali when I was 16 and a half. Around 17, and I think Evening in Paris was in the next year. So I was very young and very felt very liberated. I was staying on my own in Bombay, and just felt on top of the world. And I just embraced Hindi cinema. I didn't bring in any luggage from Bengal, like Aparna Reena. Mm-hmm. Reena Aparna said she was acting, and she left. She says, I can't deal with this, Rinku. I don't know how you do this. And she wrote a wonderful letter to Shashi Kapoor and just left and didn't do it. But I did it. I straddled both regional and I never lost touch with Bengali cinema. So I loved it. And yes, Evening in Paris created a lot of stir and did very well at the same time in the box office. But having done that, I just felt, and I just met Tiger, and I think I got engaged during the making of Evening in Paris. So it must have been, I couldn't have been 17, I must have been about 20, 21. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I realized that I didn't want to be remembered as a glamour person, because I thought there'd be more longevity if I was taken seriously. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be taken seriously, I wanted to be remembered as a good actress. So I did I made an effort to change my image. So I signed films like Aradhana, I signed films like, different films. And within a couple of years I had what I wanted to, because I suddenly felt that this was not satisfying me, because I was not really worldly wise, and I was just having fun.
In fact, it's interesting because many of the roles you had, you discussed Aradhana, you had very strong roles we often talk about the lack of roles for heroines in Hindi films, but you actually got very strong roles, and Aradhana was just a super hit in a completely.
Yes, we saw it recently. FM had organized on the big screen. Otherwise, you see it in the, but big screen is big screen. So that was wonderful. And yes, the pregnancy and everything is taken. The dialogues were quite before... it was quite forward-looking for that time. And yes, and I remember the first time this old woman appears on the screen, everybody starts laughing. The whole auditorium, starts laughing.
Yes.
And Shakti, we were all watching the first show, he just walked out of the theater. He said, "Bas." They haven't accepted her as an old person. And the wig also, the makeup was terrible. You could see it was a wig, it was, lines and everything. But despite that, after that 1 minute scene in the jail, everybody was sniffling, you could sense the change. And then somebody ran after Shakti and said, come back, it's all right, it's okay. So, yeah, they accepted me, despite the flaws and everything. But the storytelling and the emotion of that caught on.
And I think the chemistry between Rajesh Khanna and you in that movie, and especially in that song, Roop Tera Mastana, which in a sense defined at that time, I think, sensuality in cinema without being cheap in any sense at all.
And that
the
also
chemistry
happened.
Was striking.
That also happened because I think Kaka had to go somewhere and something had, there was a less time, and Shakti said, why don't we just take it in one shot? And that's what we did. We just rehearsed many times and we did it in one shot, and that became such a cult thing, and everybody remembers it and talks about it, but it was just a matter of convenience. Yes, so the chemistry people, I guess, they liked our pair. That time was the time for pairs, mm-hmm. you know, Rajendra Kumar, Saira Banu, Hema Malini, Dharmendra, and you know. Mm-hmm. So I guess that as well as...
What was it, your husband's reaction really to you acting, to you being such a huge star, your popular pairing with Rajesh Khanna? What were his reactions always? Because I've always remembered him as a very dignified private man. So it must mean, did he watch your movies?
No, he didn't. He was not a... He was, I mean, he liked Meena Kumari and Vaijanti Mala and a great fan of Lata Ji, of course, and Talat and Rafi Saab. But no, he didn't watch my films. And he always reminded me that there are many actors, but there is only one cricket captain. So I think, and when the cricket was in season, then there was no doubt who was the biggest star.
So much talk even now that should a Bollywood heroine retire after she's married?
Yeah.
If she has a baby, then it's a death knell. Mm-hmm. But you did it all then.
Yes, but I never thought about giving up films. And in fact, I got a lot of advice. And most of my friends, including Shakti Ji and all, said, don't get married because you're really on top of your profession. And this is not the time to get married because you will lose your popularity. But I just felt there is a body clock. And I felt that at this point we should be married. And like similarly, I felt at a particular time that I want to have a child, because there's no point doing things when you are much older. There is a timing in life, and I was pretty conscious of that. And I wanted to, as I've often said, that I wanted to eat my cake and have it too. And I made that effort.
So do you find it ironic in a sense that Kareena has asked the same question so many years later? In a sense, mindsets haven't changed as well, because she still asked, oh, will you work after you're married? We now see producers with no pregnancy clauses. Do you find it interesting how things, mindsets, because sometimes don't change?
Because nobody else has done it, really. Everybody has delayed their marriage and or not worked after, whether it's Madhuri Dixit or whoever. They've given up work and then they may have come back later. But nobody has continued. So I got married and continued. I had Saif continued. Saba continued. Soha continued. So I've not really given up working in films. And I haven't really made a comeback or anything. I just reduced the number of films. So yes, so it's an individual call. You know, what you value. Kareena, I think, is a wonderful performer. And... you know, she's young and attractive, so I don't see why she shouldn't. I think at the end of the day, you have to choose films. You have to do what suits you. You know, you just can't keep going back. You have to keep doing different kinds of roles so audience don't tire of you. So, you know, a little bit like that and not be too overexposed. And and doesn't matter. As long as you work, who the hell cares whether you're number one or number two? I mean, these equations are so silly.
Well, I have a question for you from Kareena. Let's just hear what she has what she has to ask.
So, well, I would like to ask my mother-in-law. Of course, she's gorgeous and beautiful. But I've also heard that she's a good cook. But she has never cooked for me. So I want to ask her that, when will you be cooking for me soon and some nice Bengali food? And will you ever do that? I'll be waiting.
She's glowing, I have to say. She really is.
Mashallah, yes. So, A, she's a vegetarian. She didn't tell you that. And my vegetarian is not very good. But, yes, of course, I'll cook for her. But she's allowed to eat fish now. So she's decided that she'll eat fish. So, I'll make her some fish.
Their wedding actually was wonderfully private in a sense. And it must have brought back some bittersweet memories for you also at a time. I mean, you organized the whole thing in a sense yourself.
We missed him a lot. And I even said what he would have done. He would have just taken Dabbu in some corner and they would have had their own private party somewhere else. Because as you know, he was not a very big party person. So, yes, he was hugely missed. And of course, he was my spell check also. And like I was, didn't know how to address some people, you know, all that was... Yeah, so he was, yes, I did everything myself, if I may say so, in the reception here, which gave me something to do and it kept me occupied. And it was, actually, I liked doing it. And I've lived in Delhi for so long. I have such wonderful friends. And although Saif wanted it to be very, very private, which he did in Bombay, but here I couldn't exclude all those people that I'd lived with for so many years and who've been so supportive. So they were part of my invitees, and you know, I
I remember also when Asef had the ceremony when he became the Nawab of Patodi. Hmm. How have you seen your son change, really? Because it's very different when your father is alive.
In my family, it's the father preference. I mean, that's also kind of a gender thing, don't you think? Because there I'm slogging over them, doing this, that and the other, but the father. So I used to tell Asef stories and he would say, well, yeah. So I mean, at one point I jump into the river, you know, crocodile infested river. He's fallen, so I jump in and save him. So he said, no, you can't save me. You are not. You don't have any muscles. I love Abba because he is strong. And I love you because you're good. And he was 2 years old. Oh, no. So what would you say to that mindset? Huh?
I always hear him talk about his ammi also. Yeah. But to be fair to him, when you look back at those times when both of you were married, it was really the story of the decade, I would say, in a sense, because beautiful film actress marrying the Indian cricket captain, the Indian cricket star. When you look back at those memories, and I remember again reading when you talked about the fact that you never looked at other considerations, the fact that both of you from different religions, and that how actually some CID sleuths had come to ask if you needed security when you're getting married. And it was interesting that it's a different time, yet the issues also raised then were interesting.
Yes, you're talking about we got engaged in 66 and I met him sort of 65-ish, 64, end of 64. And times were very, very different. And living in Bombay, we were on our own and we were young and, you know, and thank God for young people. As long as they're young people, they'll continue to fall in love. They'll continue to defy society and norms. And they have this energy and call it, you know, being naive or stupid. I mean, they don't. But when you become a parent, when you suddenly become part of establishment, then you are assessing pros and cons and you become, you know, now you are a responsible person.
Sharmila Tagore, thank you so much for joining me tonight. Thank you very much.